Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Vitelli, senior editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we have a great and a very timely guest. Richard Glick is the former chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, better known as FERC. Rich was on the commission from 2017 to 2023 and was the chair of FERC from 2021 to 2023. Rich, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Rich, I gave a very brief introduction, but can you tell our listeners a little bit about your career background and your work with FERC?
As you mentioned, I was the chair of FERC at the beginning of the Biden administration until I left the commission at the expiration of my term, which was in early 2023. And before that, I was a commissioner from 2017 to 2021. And we addressed a number of issues at FERC while I was there, all the way from distributed energy resources to transmission to a number of capacity market issues in the eastern United States and, of course, reliability. But I have a pretty lengthy set of jobs I've had. I'm pretty old in the energy industry. In particular, I've worked for a clean energy developer for a number of years, worked for an electric utility out west for a number of years, but also had a number of different jobs in government, including Capitol Hill and the Department of Energy and the Clinton administration. And I worked for Secretary of Energy Bill Richardson at the time. And then also, as I mentioned earlier, I worked on Capitol Hill on two different occasions. So I spent a lot of my life thinking about energy policy issues, especially at the federal level.
So quite a long list of various titles you've held over the years. You have a long view of this industry, I'd say.
Well, as I said, I'm old, so that's why I have a long view. I've had a number of interesting jobs, and I don't think any time has been more exciting on energy issues than today, given everything that's going on.
So we're recording this podcast on Monday, October 28th. It's 8 days before Election Day. Right now, I think the betting markets are favoring Trump, but the polls really show it to be a coin flip election. Nobody has any idea who's going to win, so there's a real chance we could see a second Trump presidency. Now, you've been involved, as we said, in energy policy your whole career. You've seen various administrations, both Democrat and Republican. You've worked on the Democratic side. How would a Republican administration change the energy sector overall?
Well, first of all, I would love to know who's going to win the election, but as you point out, we don't know today, and we may not know even on election night, so we'll have to see what happens. But if Trump were to win, certainly it would. I think that the change, I don't know if it would be in the energy sector, but certainly energy policy could change pretty dramatically. I think, first of all, we know that former President Trump has been a strong critic of renewable energy, particularly wind and solar power. Even in the campaign, even as a matter of a couple of days ago, he was still railing against both solar energy and wind energy. Certainly there would be a change at the very least in the tenor. But I think we'd also see a change in policies as well, policies from the perspective of the current Biden administration policies promoting the clean energy transition. I think we'd see certainly less of a focus on government programs promoting those technologies or also limiting the barriers to those technologies. But also we'd see, I think, more of a bent towards traditional energy fuels and technologies, certainly oil and gas, but coal and nuclear power. I think we'd see policies really aimed at focusing on increasing those technologies, are certainly increasing aid to those technologies at the federal level.
Now, obviously, it's not only the result of the presidential election that's uncertain. House and Senate are both, especially perhaps the House, are both really up in the air. So let's say, theoretically, Trump is to win the presidency but not control both houses and not be able to pass significant legislation. How can he affect some of the issues you're talking about just from the executive branch?
I think you rightly point out that it's the election, the impact on the energy industry is not just the result of the presidential election, but also the election of members of Congress, those both the House and Senate. Control of the majority of those bodies can make a big impact. So, for instance, if President Trump were to win and the Republicans were to control the majorities in the House and the Senate, they might try to move legislation more focused again on the traditional technologies that we discussed a couple minutes ago, you know, or at legislation aimed at reducing the government incentives for clean energy, for instance. But even then, as you point out, the margins are in both the House and Senate, regardless of who wins majorities, are expected to be close. And certainly it makes it more difficult with close margins to pass significant amounts of legislation. Although that has happened in the past, you recall the Inflation Reduction Act was passed without any Republican votes. And in the Senate, there were only 50 Democrats, and the tie was broken by Vice President Harris at the time. But even putting aside Congress, let's say that under your hypothetical, and I'm certainly not hoping this isn't the case, but if under the hypothetical, if former President Trump were to win this time around, and even if he wasn't able to achieve much of his agenda through congressional action, being the president, controlling the executive branch really means the ability to influence a lot, regardless of legislative outcomes. So for instance, appointing cabinet secretaries, moving policies along, and I can name a couple that I think right off the top of my head could be a big impact if you're in the clean energy industry, one of which is offshore wind. As we know, former President Trump has attacked offshore wind on a number of occasions, and the government, and particularly the Interior Department through the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, BOEM, has a big say in terms of leases that are provided for with regard to new offshore wind projects. Certainly, once offshore wind auctions are complete, there still is a lot of government work those projects have to go through, including getting permitting approval and getting a number of other approvals to the government process. And a new president with a Secretary of Interior that might be inclined to equally oppose offshore wind could have a dramatic impact on those programs. In addition to that, the Department of Energy has a number of programs which there is, you know, they're implementing under the Inflation Reduction Act. Now they're trying to get as much money out the door as they can before the end of the year, just in case the election changes things. But certainly the next administration will still have a big role to play in loan guarantee program, for instance, or there's certainly funding for certain transmission programs. And I would expect under a Trump administration versus a Harris administration, you'd see much less money going out the door for those types of programs.
Yeah, in my conversations with the sector, people are relatively not in a panic as much about solar, onshore wind, even battery storage, but they'll concede that if Trump does win, that offshore wind can be in trouble. Offshore wind and electric vehicles are the two sectors that I'm hearing a lot about would suffer the most under a Trump presidency.
And I don't know enough about the electric vehicle sector to really comment intelligently about that, but obviously I spent more of my time on utility scale generation, for instance, which include offshore wind. I would point out that everyone asks this question pretty much every day, is if Trump wins, what's going to happen to the Inflation Reduction Act, in particular the solar and wind and storage tax credits that were included in that statute. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation and you don't know what was going to happen. Of course, much depends, as we just discussed, on who controls the House and who controls the Senate. But even if the Republicans control the Senate and the House, and even if there are margins large enough that would allow them to pass certain bills, I would think on tax incentives, it would be difficult to repeal them for several reasons. One of which, many of those projects are located in red districts. Secondly, I think there's a lot of public support for these projects, even if there is concern about government spending. For instance, I think on the tax credit side, there's still certainly a lot of support. It would be unpopular for members, certain members of Congress, to vote against those tax incentives, especially members of Congress that are in so-called swing districts where they could certainly lose in 2 years if their constituents don't like how they vote. And then third, I think a number of Republicans wouldn't want to be accused of increasing taxes, which would be the argument if you were to repeal a certain tax incentive. So I wouldn't say that clean energy industry should rest easy if Trump were to win and the Republicans were to control the House and the Senate. But I think there's at least a pretty good chance that they'd be able to save those tax incentives.
That is, I think, the consensus view of the industry, that even if Republicans won a narrow majority in the House and Senate and Trump won the presidency, there might be changes around the edges to the IRA, but a wholesale repeal would be unlikely. And a lot of people bring up the fact that 18 Republicans signed a letter to Speaker Mike Johnson saying, do not get rid of these clean energy clauses. They're beneficial to our constituents. There is another view out there that the IRA, because the total price tag has been so much higher than the original CBO projections, that it will become such a target that when Trump is trying to pass his tax cuts and is trying to find a way to pay for it, the IRA will be just such an obvious example that even Republicans who at some point opposed repealing it will kind of go along with their president and their party. I think that's a minority view, but it's definitely a concern out there, right? Is that something in your conversations that you're seeing is a fear of the industry?
Yeah, definitely. And as I said a second ago, the industry shouldn't rest easy. And that's because of the scenario you laid out. It's nice that 18 Republicans signed a letter saying don't reverse course on these tax credits. But it's easy to sign a letter. It's a lot harder to vote against a bill that most of your party supports, especially if it's like a budget reconciliation bill, which, as you point out, could extend the Trump tax cuts from the previous term as president that are scheduled to expire soon. And then you'd have to bring down the whole bill, essentially, if you voted against that because you didn't like the removal of the tax incentive. So it's something to definitely be concerned about. As you point out, it's the minority view, but it's certainly a realistic possibility. And that's why it's so important, I would think, first of all, for the clean energy industry, if the Democrats at least have one control of either the House or the Senate, if they lose the presidency, or certainly if they win the presidency, there's less of a concern there. But the nightmare scenario is, of course, as you point out, losing the House or not gaining back the House, losing the Senate majority and losing the White House. And then we'll see what happens. But still, I think that if I was a betting man, I would say certainly greater than even chance that most of those tax incentives, maybe not all of them, but most of them could be saved.
But Rich, you also talked about some of the things a president can do just through executive action, just with a pen and a phone. And when you look at the IRA, when the IRA was passed, nobody really knew what to make of the various clauses. And a lot of the important information came through these guidances and clarifications that were issued by the administration over the next 2+ years. And those aren't complete even today. So even just a Trump presidency without control of Congress, can he really set back the IRA? Is he going to go back and look at these previous guidances and rewrite them in a way that makes it a lot harder for clean energy investors to earn these incentives?
Well, any administration can do that. It's a little bit harder if guidance is finalized. So that's why the Treasury Department, I'm sure, is currently working hard to try to finalize as much as they can, and to the extent or in the event that former President Trump were to win the presidency again. But once guidance is finalized, you'd have to go through a whole new rulemaking process, essentially issuing a proposed set of new guidance that would then be commented on. And then you'd have to go through, just like any other rulemaking, you'd have to go through a notice of comment period and then after that, change the guidance. So it still could happen. And certainly I'd be concerned about that, but it would at least take several years for that to happen. That's very true. It's also true, I should say, of the EPA regulations regarding greenhouse gas emissions and utility generating facilities. That is currently being litigated in the courts right now, but you would expect that if former President Trump were to take office again, his EPA would certainly try to rescind those regulations, assuming they don't die in the courts. And it would just take a while for the administration to go back and have a whole new rulemaking process and remove them. In the meantime, those rules would be in effect at least for another couple of years.
And Rich, I just want to jump back because we've been talking about the IRA, but you meant we talked about offshore wind. Now, in Trump's first term, it didn't seem like Boehm was particularly hostile to offshore wind. The industry was much more nascent then, but it seemed like things moved along maybe until the last year or two of his administration. Am I recalling that accurately? And why is there the fear that a second term would be more hostile?
So you are recalling that accurately. I think that's correct. And you hear people point that out. And maybe it's more of a feeling than anything else. But I think that, you know, the former president hasn't stopped in his criticism. And I think to the extent that it very much would depend on who is the next Secretary of Interior and who is the next director of the Office of Ocean Energy Management. But I would think that there's a lot of talk about getting loyalists into various important government positions. And I would think they'd be more focused on trying to meet the president's preferences than maybe was the case the first time around, where they were, you know, just getting their feet wet and they had a number of other issues to deal with. Again, I can't say that you're wrong, that wouldn't initially be the case in the second administration, but I have a bad feeling that they would target offshore wind in particular.
I was actually listening to the former president's interview on Joe Rogan this weekend, and he was talking about offshore wind, about its effect on whales, its effect on birds. So it doesn't seem like it's a favorite sector for his, but I guess we'll see what materializes once he's if he ends up in that office.
Yes, absolutely. And as we know, his dislike or concern about offshore wind goes way back to when he was trying to develop a a golf resort in Scotland, and they were building an offshore wind project near there, and he hasn't let up since then.
I remember the lawsuits around that project. And so your background most recently in government was as the chairman of FERC, and the president is the person who appoints people to FERC and also who tabs somebody to serve as chair. If Trump is reelected, presumably he will appoint a Republican. How would a change from a Democratic chairman to a Republican chair of FERC, and then maybe eventually to Republican majority control of the commission, what effect would that have?
I think your audience well knows FERC is an independent agency and is not supposed to be influenced by the White House, no matter who the president is or who the Secretary of Energy is, or regardless of that. But having said that, two areas of influence the president has is one, naming the chair, and two, nominating new commissioners, although those new commissioners have to be confirmed by the Senate. In terms of the first power, in terms of naming the chair, the president on day one, whether it be Vice President Harris or whether it be former President Trump, can designate the chair. That was the case for me. I was designated on inauguration night by President Biden to be the new chair, replacing a Republican chair. And so the chair of FERC has significant influence over the agenda of the commission, not completely, because there are certain matters that have to be taken up by statutory requirement regardless. But for the most part, the chair gets to choose what gets brought up for vote, what the commission staff focus on, whether it be policy statements, whether it be rulemakings, whether it be advance notice of proposed rulemakings, all sorts of actions, activities the commission takes are really under the influence of the chair. So appointing a new chair could have a dramatic impact, at least the commission's agenda for the foreseeable future. And as you point out, also when a position opens up, the president then can nominate somebody. Now, typically, as you know, the way the statute works is you can only have three of one party and two of another. Right now, you have three Democrats and two Republicans. So if you had a new chair, that chair would have to get the vote of at least one Democrat for initiatives that he or she tries to move forward. But if a commission's position opens up, you know, and there's three Democrats and two Republicans, it could turn to three Republicans and two Democrats relatively quickly, especially if you can get Senate confirmation, which again is why it's important who controls the Senate as well, which party controls the Senate. So it could have a dramatic impact on FERC's agenda in the long run. I think in the short term, you wouldn't see much of a change unless commissioners were to leave for some reason or another.
Well, very interesting. Another thing to keep an eye on. Now, we've been talking this whole time about a potential Trump presidency. And I think it's more interesting because we have a Democrat now, and the assumption is that a Harris administration would represent less of a change than a Trump administration would. But there is also the potential for a Democratic presidency, a Democratic House. And though I think it's probably the least likely scenario, even the Democrats holding on to 50, to 50 Senate seats, if there was a Democratic administration, what do you think the priorities would be to build on some of the momentum from the infrastructure bill and the IRA?
Well, I think you'd see a couple areas of focus, one of which is obviously continuing to administer the IRA. That means the programs both under the Interior Department and the Energy Department and the Treasury Department, for that matter. I think you continue to see aggressive promotion of the incentives that are included in that statute and other government programs, funding programs such as loan guarantees. And I mentioned transmission earlier. I think you'd see even a greater emphasis on transmission. I think the current Biden administration, especially Secretary Granholm, she's done a tremendous job at the Department of Energy, but they've been focused quite a bit on transmission. But I think it's become increasingly clear, due to concerns about load growth, due to concerns about extreme weather, due to concerns about just some congestion occurring around the country, and also the ability to access remotely located renewable resources, there's a lot of demand for additional transmission capacity. And I think you'd see, in addition to carrying out the existing programs that are in the Inflation Reduction Act, you'd see, I think, additional emphasis, both in terms of the administration at the executive branch level, but also in terms of congressional proposals. And one policy, I think, that was left on the cutting room floor, so to speak, during the Inflation Reduction Act debate was tax incentives for transmission. And I think there's a decent chance you might be able to see that, especially in a Harris administration with a Democratic House and Senate.
It seems like transmission could potentially be an area where there's some type of bipartisan support. Is there any Republican support for improving the transmission sector?
You know, it's funny you say that because you would think if you took a step back and just maybe from 10 years ago, if you had said Democrats would be seen as the party promoting electric transmission, Republicans be seen the party, Republicans being seen as the party not supporting transmission or at least not strongly supporting transmission, you would think something weird has happened, right? And so we're 10 years later, and that, you know, I think the Democrats are all in on transmission. You see it, statements from members of Congress and the executive branch and so on. There's been some concerns on the Republican side, some of which has to do with siting. There's been proposals about federal siting of transmission. I think there's been some concerns about using federal eminent domain for certain transmission lines. There's also been concern about certain policies that would, I think, promote transmission development, such as different types of cost allocation that FERC might be able to utilize to promote a greater amounts of transmission development. Those are the type of policies that Republicans have expressed some concern about over the last several years. I think you've seen some breakthrough in the Manchin-Barrasso bill, which is, as again, as of this date, is pending in the Senate, in two areas, one of which that bill removes barriers to siting, at least siting transmission on federal land, for instance, NEPA reform and so on. And there seems to be bipartisan consensus there for the most part. There's some members of both parties that have some concerns, but for the most part, there's a lot of consensus there. The other part of the bill that doesn't get as much play, I think, that is, in my opinion, more important in terms of what's in that bill is the language regarding interregional transmission, requiring, for instance, there's a provision in the bill that would require FERC to engage in interregional transmission planning requirement or impose that requirement upon jurisdictional utilities. And also some language in there making it easier for FERC to spread the cost of transmission more broadly, which I think would certainly remove some of the disincentives to developing transmission that exists today. And so, you know, they got a very strong vote out of the committee, a bipartisan vote. We'll see what happens when Congress returns for their lame duck session as to whether that can be moved across the finish line before Congress adjourns at the end of the year. But I think you're slowly starting to see at least some consensus on some bipartisan consensus on some transmission issues. There still are some concerns out there, I mentioned before, that among some Republicans about some of those other provisions.
Well, definitely a lot to keep an eye out for in the coming days and whoever ends up leading the next administration. Now, we mentioned that your term at FERC ended last January, and later that year, you helped to launch a consulting firm called GQ New Energy Strategies. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that venture?
Sure. And I would say, first of all, GQ New Energy Strategies has a new name. Now we're called GQS New Energy Strategies, in large part because we added additional person. It used to be my last name, Glick, and business partners, Pamela Quinlan, and now Liz Salerno has joined us as well. So that's the GQS. But basically, after I left FERC, I was thinking a lot about what I wanted to do. And I knew I wanted to stay involved in energy issues, especially energy issues related to the clean energy transition. And I saw a need out there just talking to a bunch of folks in the industry about, I think there needs to be some additional focus on areas such as FERC, such as RTOs, the regional markets around the country, and even the markets that don't have existing RTOs. There's a lot going on there as well. Sat down with, again, mentioned Pamela Quinlan, who had been our chief of staff at FERC, and we jointly decided to initiate this venture with the idea of, again, focusing on eliminating some of the barriers out there that exist for the clean energy transition and helping clients navigate those processes. And then Liz Salerno, who was in charge of the transmission agenda at FERC when I was the chair, fortunately left the commission and agreed to join us after she left. And we're very lucky to have her as well. And between the two of them, the people that had worked at FERC issues over the last several years know how brilliant they are and how involved they are in all the issues around that are popping up around the country. That's just a pleasure to be able to work with them again and to be able to work on the issues that I feel strongly about.
So if there is a Kamala Harris administration, have you given any thought to returning to government, or are you done with the public sector for good?
I'm done with the public sector. First of all, I feel very lucky to have been able to spend 5 years at FERC and before that work at the Department of Energy I mentioned earlier and also work on Capitol Hill. But I think my time in the government is come and gone. The experience I had most recently when the president nominated me for a second term and Chairman Manchin decided he didn't want to give me a hearing to move my nomination forward, I at that point, I said, that's it for my government service. I respect people that do this. It's very much very important, but I don't really want to go through that again. So I like where I am, and it's a little less pressure, which is nice too.
Well, you certainly have accomplished enough in government for one lifetime, right?
I appreciate that. That's very nice of you to say.
Well, Rich, thank you so much for coming on your show. I think it was a really interesting and, like I said, a really timely conversation. And we'll have to have you back again once the dust settles in the election and the new administration to talk about the state of play.
Glad to do it, and appreciate your invite.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. And please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.